From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, floating format tonight with our main guest starting this hour, later, the 100th anniversary of the Jersey Devil with James McClory. Looking forward to all of this tonight. Well, finally, but in his final acts of clemency, President George W. Bush has granted early prison releases to two former U.S. Border Patrol agents whose convictions for shooting a Mexican drug dealer fueled the national debate over illegal immigration. Mr. Bush, responding to heavy pressure from Republican and Democratic lawmakers alike, commuted the prison sentences of Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compeon. The two guards from El Paso, Texas, each were sentenced to more than 10 years for the shooting, which they say tried to cover up. They will be released within 2 months. This was a superb decision. And by the way, thanks and congratulations to KFI's John and Ken here in Los Angeles, who championed for their release for some time. The drum roll for recalls of peanut butter products continues without let up, as more companies now pulling back everything from cookies to candies on store shelves. The actions followed a U.S. Food and Drug Administration warning that you should avoid peanut butter products containing peanut butter or peanut butter paste while the Salmonella outbreak probe continues. The U.S. Health Department focuses now on products made with peanut butter, like crackers, not jars of peanut butter, on store shelves. The official toll from the outbreak across 43 states and Canada now stands at 470 people sickened, with 6 deaths that have been linked. Federal officials had traced one source of Salmonella contamination to a plant in Georgia, which makes peanut butter products for large institutions and peanut butter paste used by food manufacturers in everything from cookies and crackers to cereal and ice cream. At least 85 companies had reportedly purchased peanut products from the Georgia plant. 30 had been urged to run their own tests for bacteria. It's not clear whether the Salmonella was found at the plant is the cause of the massive outbreak. Food safety expert Jeff Nelkin with us. Jeff, will they ever get to the bottom of this?
I believe they're getting a lot closer. And keep in mind that a lot of the testing that they're doing takes about 5 to 7 days to culture. So I think you're going to hear some results by the middle of this coming week.
It seems to me that this Georgia plant may be the culprit.
That's what it so far looks like.
Okay, and they're saying now this is not jars of peanut butter, so people should not panic about that. Is that correct?
Correct. But what we should make a point of, these companies, or this one specific company that they focused on, produced a lot of institutional peanut butter and paste. So it went to a lot of nursing homes and schools and, institutional situations. So if anybody does happen to have any relatives in those kind of locations and they may have a concern, please call that location and let and just find out what they're doing about the peanut butter scenario.
Sounds like this company had the market share on, putting in the paste in the crackers and cookies, huh?
It looks that way. Even Kellogg's, they found one package that was positive for Salmonella, and Kellogg's really did a phenomenal job. They pulled back over 7 million cases of product, even though there was only just one package identified with possible Salmonella that they were testing.
All right, Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com, as he also continues to follow this story. Thank you so much, Jeff. Stung by the worry that shoppers who cut spending by the most dramatic amount in at least 39 years this holiday season may not start spending again for a long time, stores are making drastic changes. They are cutting out marginal suppliers, hiring outside experts to keep inventory lean, holding special events for those who are still buying, and making extraordinary efforts to gauge customer satisfaction. The new discipline will most likely be good news for you, who will also find stores less cluttered and see an array of products at lower prices, from ordinary groceries to even blue jeans. Crude oil fell below $35 a barrel in New York on speculation faltering global economic growth will drive down fuel consumption for a second year. In a moment, alternative energy expert Sterling Allen joins us as we'll talk about what's new in the field of alternative energy. Marking Martin Luther King Jr. Day on the eve of his inauguration, President-elect Barack Obama urged Americans to act on the slain civil rights leader's vision as he led the nation in a call to service aimed at helping people in need. Mr. Obama, who takes the oath of office at noon on Tuesday as the nation's 44th president, began his day with a previously unannounced visit to Walter Reed Army Medical Center to meet with wounded troops. And during the visit, which lasted a little more than an hour, Mr. Obama met with 14 service members recovering from wounds they sustained in Iraq or Afghanistan. Accompanied by Martin Luther King III, he then headed to a district shelter for homeless teenagers to lend a hand in a project to renovate the facility's rooms. Here is a clip of Martin Luther King Jr.'s historic speech.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
Meanwhile, Secret Service and police tighten a security clamp on Washington, D.C., closing major traffic arteries on the eve of Barack Obama's historic inauguration as President-elect Obama crisscrossed across the city. As many as 4 million people, the largest crowd in inaugural history, expected to be at the National Mall, where giant telescreens have been scattered throughout the area so spectators can watch Mr. Obama become the 44th president of the United States. Sad story out of Maryland, a pileup of 35 cars and 5 tractor trailers on a snowy Maryland highway killed 2 people, seriously injuring at least a dozen. Rough weather. 2 Burmese men who were lost at sea for 25 days after a fishing boat they were in sank off the southeast coast of Indonesia have been found alive, floating in an oversized ice box. The men were found 25 days after the vessel went down about 60 miles off Horn Island. They climbed into a large ice box at the, as the rest of the crew scrambled for something else to grab, and they were found by pilots after more than 3 weeks in the water. Bob May, best known for donning the robot suit in his hit 1960s television show Lost in Space, has died at the age of 69. May died of congestive heart failure at a hospital. He was particularly fond of his robot role, once saying, "He came to consider the suit a home away from home." Of course, one of those in that program, Lost in Space, Billy Mumy, our friend, played Will Robinson. He's on the line with us now. Bill, how are you, my friend?
Hey, George. Happy New Year.
You too, Bill. You too. Tell me a little bit about Bob May. He was in the robot costume itself, right?
Bobby gave that robot all of the movements that gave it character. You know, he created the bubble turning and up and down, and he had his arms inside those claws waving around and going, "Danger, Will Robinson." I'll tell you, he was the hardest working man in show business I ever knew. He was inside that claustrophobic fiberglass, you know, box prop for 84-hour-long episodes. Every week he memorized, you know, 40 to 50 pages of dialogue, and he delivered it to us. And he would sync up the chest plate with the dialogue with a little button in his hand. And unfortunately, it sounded like a guy inside a fiberglass box. So the dialogue he delivered to us was then re-recorded by Dick Tufeld. But Bobby memorized all the lines and gave it the rhythm and everything that we worked from.
That's what I was going to ask you, too. So you could all on the set hear him talking because he had to do his acting role in the robot. But when it was actually on the television show, when we saw this at home, it was a different voice, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, he must have been just one heck of a guy to work with. I saw some old clips of him later on in his life standing by the robot, just having one heck of a time.
He was a very enthusiastic guy and always positive and upbeat. He was the grandson of Chick Johnson from Olson and Johnson from vaudevillian days, and he'd been a part of show business since he was born. And it's a sad day for us from the old Lost in Space alumni, but Bobby had a good run, and you know, I'm sure he's having a new experience right now on the next plane, and I'm sure Jonathan Harris, who played Dr. Smith, is insulting him right now with the "Silence, you ninny, cease your prattling, you clevering clemp, oh, the pain, oh, dear."
I love it. Billy, you take care of yourself. We'll get you back on again.
Okay, George. Be well, man.
Billy Mooney, great guy. Billy was also the little boy in the Twilight Zone, a couple of those episodes as well. In a moment, Sterling Allen joins us, founder of, it's CEO of PES Network. It's a new energy congress. We're going to be talking about some alternative energy for a couple hours right here on Coast to Coast AM. And then later on, the 100th anniversary of the frightening Jersey Devil. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Sterling Allen, founder and CEO of PES Network, Inc., and the New Energy Congress, which is comprised of energy professionals from all around the world who review the most promising new and emerging energy technologies. They publish the Global Top 100 Clean Energy Technologies list, which is publicly available to you as a resource. It's generated from a continuous review process, taking into consideration criteria such as environmental impact, sustainability, cost benefits, reliability, safety, and availability as well. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Sterling, welcome to the show.
George, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Now, you talk a lot about free energy. I sometimes think in my lifetime I'll never see free energy. Sterling, what do you mean by that?
Well, free energy has, been really a loaded term for a long time. And I like to take it at its face value. Free as in you don't have to pay for it. Solar is free, wind is free, tidal energy is free. And those are modalities that we can relate to. You know, it's something it doesn't take rocket science to see that that's an obvious source. You put up a little turbine in the wind and it turns the little blades, and then you put a little generator on there and you get electricity. It just takes a little more imagination to picture a device that maybe is using magnet energy, magnets repelling magnets. Physicists, according to their present understanding of science, say, that's impossible. But the problem is, whenever you have somebody that builds a prototype that does it, then you have to say, well, maybe there's something going on there that we don't understand yet, and we put our science models to the review process and come up with some new science to understand why. Physics said that men would never be able to fly, and yet the Wright brothers proved them wrong, and now, you know, flight is a very common occurrence for human beings. And so when we talk about free energy, we're talking about those devices that can harness inexhaustible, ubiquitous, continuous sources of energy, ideally, that are available to us from nature. You don't have to pay for them. The device, of course, isn't free.
Right, right.
But the idea is to come up with at the most cost-effective, reliable, safe, you know, some of those criteria you mentioned earlier. That's what we're trying to look for. And so if somebody's got a device, they've got a prototype, you know, we'll listen to them and see what they've got. Go check it out if it warrants that. Give them some coverage. We don't typically go into ideas. You know, somebody has a great idea about how to do this or that, because for every one working prototype, there's 1,000 great ideas, and we just can't chase all those.
Do you think the most simplest idea will be a device that people can heat and possibly cool their homes with or power their homes?
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that I found is that you would think that with how many people there are on the planet, how many people are chasing these ideas, that if it was a matter of simplicity, we would have stumbled onto it not only decades ago, but centuries ago. But it turns out that sometimes the most simple things are not necessarily something we stumble on, just obviously. One of the technologies we've come across recently, for example, is a motor technology that is just tiny compared to a regular engine, yet it has as much output, and the displacement in the cylinders is almost the same as a regular engine, yet this thing's just puny. And it's not because it's more complex, it's because he's been able to engineer a very simple design. That's the mighty or massive yet tiny design, also called the mighty engine. Really fascinating technology, and sometimes I think simplicity will astonish us all. And that's actually one of the things we're looking for to kind of break this logjam on why some of these technologies haven't come forward and they've been suppressed or whatnot, is we're looking for a design that could be open sourced where we could post a set of plans on the internet that's fairly easy to source, fairly easy to build, is inexpensive. I think that could really break the logjam on the suppression that has taken place in some of these technologies, not all of them.
Sterling, there's no doubt in your mind that there's been suppression on some of these incredible technologies, right?
Absolutely not. I mean, it does happen, but you know, something I found personally as I have interfaced with these different technologies is the biggest impediment is not the men in black factor, you know, the thugs, the bullies on the block, whether the oil interests or whatever. It's actually interpersonal conflicts. The impossible personalities, the inventor who thinks he should start out with $50 million before he'll even talk to you.
And I guess that happens.
It does.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the thugs are still there too, right?
They are. I consider that about 10% of the pie chart of what the obstacles that need to be overcome to get to market.
Have some technologies, Sterling, been purchased, let's say, by big oil or other energy companies, big ones, and they bury it?
That happens, yep. I know people who have these great technologies who can document that they were offered such and such, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to basically hand the technology over to such and such company, and they said, no, sorry, not going to do it, don't want to see this thing shelved.
Wow. Tell me more about the New Energy Congress.
Well, the reason I started the New Energy Congress a little more than 3 years ago was, you know, we've been running a news service nominally for about 8 years, just looking at different free energy technologies, and it's really easy to get excited about this stuff. Somebody's got a car that runs on water, or, you know, some vortex technology that can build a power your home for 1 cent per kilowatt hour compared to the 4 cents, which is the cheapest wholesale price you can get for energy, sometimes 10 times cheaper than what we're paying for electricity now. You know, it's kind of easy. I tend to be a little bit gullible that way, you know, trying to run with it and post it in our news. But over and over again, what would happen is as we got looking into this stuff, it would turn out that there was a problem with the math, or maybe they didn't take this into consideration, or in worst-case scenarios, it was a fraud. Somebody was just trying to get some, you know, hoodwink people into and make lots of money.
You mean like Enron? I didn't say that, did I?
No, we're talking minor league, not major league.
Yeah, exactly. That's major league fraud.
Right.
My gosh.
And they all, what happens to them is they get bailed out.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. With everything you've been looking at, Sterling, in terms of technologies that are possibly available, I say possibly because we're really not to the marketplace with some of these, but what do you see as the number one technology out there?
Well, let's get back to the New Energy Congress, and I'll answer that question.
All right.
And so as I was looking at all these different technologies and just kind of frustrated with, you know, what's real out there, I decided let's get an organization of people who can kind of act as a brain trust to make quick work of the analysis of these different promising technologies, try and find the needle in the haystack, so to speak. You know, as we're talking about a particular technology in Australia, maybe somebody's been down there and they've seen it, or they looked into that 5 years ago and came up with this conclusion. It gives us a head start. And so it kind of also helps us as we're filtering our news to have a higher caliber of material there. And so we've come up with what's called, as you mentioned in the introduction, the Top 100 Clean Energy Technologies listing. You can go to top100energy.com is the domain that's a shortcut to that destination. And for the last year plus, number one in that listing, to answer your question, has been Sterling Energy Systems. Now, that's spelled different than my name. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G. And they use a Stirling engine at the focal point of a concentrated solar dish. And this is a utility-scale solar technology design. And because they're able to do an economy of scale of making a lot of these things using some basic off-the-shelf types of technology, they are down to the point of being at the same price as grid electricity. We're talking natural gas and or coal-fired plants. They are at or below those prices, and they're going to be going online this year. They're going to have two plants. One's called Solar One, the other Solar Two.
Let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back, Sterling. Pick up the free Coast Zone newsletter by going to coasttocoastam.com. Click the link. Sign up for it. It is an email newsletter. You get it every morning. It's free, kind of our way of saying thank you for listening to Coast AM. When we come right back, Sterling Allen joins us as we talk about alternative energy on Coast to Coast AM. We've got Sterling Allen for the first couple of hours. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Sterling, let's talk a little bit more about that energy systems company, what they've got out there, and then we'll move on to some of these other issues here.
Sure. The Sterling Energy Systems, I was just mentioning that this year they're going to be going online with the Solar 1 and Solar 2 combined. These are two facilities, California. They're going to be putting out as much as Hoover Dam, 1.75 gigawatts of electricity. This is solar electricity, and no longer more expensive than grid power, but actually at or below the same the price of grid. So we've reached grid parity. Now, I know that's not that sexy. Solar's been around for a long time, probably hoping to get a better answer than solar, but presently, that's the best technology in our, and we cover all three energy technologies in our top 100. So wind, tide, geothermal, they're all in there. And most of the things in the top 10 are the more conventional free energy technologies. But we do have some really fun ones that are further outside the box. I'd like to draw an analogy.
Sure.
As we look at these different technologies, you started this show with the question, are we ever going to see any of these technologies make it? And you're referring to the more exotic things, the magnet motors, the gravity motors, the over-unity electromagnetic motors where you're getting more electricity out than what you put in, the zero-point energy. And the answer is, it's like the greased pole. You can see at the top of the pole that there's something real. You see the money or the candy or whatever it is up there, but to climb that pole with all the grease on it, it's not an easy task. And the grease is comprised of, the men in black factor, the, personal conflicts, the typical obstacles that you run into in taking something to market, and then you have those other things added on top. So, I have to say it's real. Everything that I can see, these things are for real. We will see them. Even though I personally have never seen a magnet motor in operation, there's enough other evidence, videos, testimonials, that there really is something to this stuff. And I really do expect that not too long from now, we'll start to see some of this come out. And in almost every other area that we just mentioned, there are devices that are as close as 1 year or less from marketplace arrival.
Now, how in the heck did the guy trained in biological sciences, you, end up getting interested in free energy?
Well, yeah, I started in that area of biological sciences, and I kind of went outside the box there. I went into bioelectrochemistry, where I was looking at the interaction of living systems with externally applied electromagnetic phenomena, body electric kind of stuff, and I ended up leaving the academic world to kind of help prepare for the end of the world, hunkering down for end times and whatnot.
Really?
Yeah. Back in about 90, I guess it was 90, 87 was when I made my departure from that world, and basically made that my focus for a long time. And then I had another stint of in graduate school getting into some physiology and whatnot, and then I left after about 9 months, and I've not been back. Started a website that was talking about religious political issues, found a code in the alphabetical sequence of biblical words, similar to the Bible code, fascinating stuff. You can look up phone numbers, zip codes, addresses, dates, phone numbers in the Bible lexicon, and find all kinds of amazing stuff. Did that for a few years. And on this website, somebody approached me about a device that was in Africa. It was a free energy device, this magnet motor. And I thought, I don't have a page on my site about those types of things. So yeah. I started an index. And that basically was the beginnings of my free energy news. almost immediately turned into a full-time endeavor. I was contacted by this company, actually a magnet motor company in Australia, not Australia, in South Africa, the Perendev motor that a lot of people have seen on YouTube. You have this.
Sure.
Yeah, you've seen that.
Yep. Yep.
I actually helped assemble that thing. We flew down to Johannesburg right when that thing came off the out of the machine shop, put it together for a week while we were there. Couldn't get the magnets in the right configuration.
That's critical, isn't it?
Yeah. And not every one of the positions is populated, so it's a matter of getting, it's like tuning the thing. And 2 months later, he sent us that video, and we sat on it for a couple of years. And then when he was going to make a public announcement on German television, he gave me permission to post that. And so we put it up in our news, and now, you know, millions of people have seen that video. It's not skeptic proof. You could picture that somebody's in the back putting a cheater device on there during the acceleration, and then they get out of the way while he does the walk around during deceleration. I don't think that's the case. I do think that's a legitimate technology. In fact, he claims that he's in production of that thing. There's some issues with credibility in terms of there's a bit of a BS factor going on. And you find that with most inventors. They tend to overpromise and underdeliver because their head's up in the clouds. That's where inventors are. They're out in the
And they all believe in what they're doing.
They do.
I mean, I was at a conference several years ago, Sterling, and a guy came up to me after my speech, and I was outside sitting down with my producer, Tom, and he said, can I show you something confidentially? And I went, well, yeah, I guess you can. He says, you got to promise me you won't say anything to anybody. You won't say anything on Coast to Coast. And I said, well, I promise, show me. So he reaches into his pocket and pulls out some pictures, and he goes, look. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, what is it? He said, that's my perpetual motion machine. And I said, this is your perpetual motion machine? And he said, yeah. And I said, these are toilet bowl parts on this picture. And he said, I know, that's how it works. And I said, well, does it? And he said, no, not yet. I can't figure it out. So inventors do sometimes over embellish their ideas.
Yeah. We get something like that almost every day, somebody who's got a great idea. And what we typically do is say, you know, let us know when you've got a prototype. Meanwhile, here's a great forum you can go to kick around some ideas. Some really smart people there can give you some good feedback. And I should mention the website I refer. It's overunity.com. It's a great website.
Let's talk a little bit about magnet motors. Are you familiar at all with Edward Leeds Skullnin from a place called Coral Castle in Homestead, Florida?
Fascinating, yeah.
Yes.
That was. Yep.
They found somewhere in a very small building where he did this incredible work of moving these huge blocks of limestone that all by himself, nobody knows how he did it. But he had what could have been some kind of device there that worked on the principles of magnetism. He even wrote a little tiny pamphlet book, which I have at home, on magnetism. And he believes that every substance was magnetic. It wasn't just, you know, iron, for example. And it, just amazing. I think this guy somehow may have invented some kind of magnetic motor that worked in the opposite, and that was he created an anti-gravity machine, was able to move those blocks with his magnets. Is that possible?
That's something that I have found in the legends and stories about magnet motors. Very often you will see that there's an anti-gravity component too when you get these things running. I had an associate that worked with me that claimed to have been working on a project, and when this thing got running, the thing actually flew off the table, and somebody happened to reach up and grab the disconnect lever to make it to shut off, and it came back down. This is a guy that I, you know, stayed in my home for 4 months, was telling me this story. So, he's quite credible in terms of, you know, not, he does tend to exaggerate a little bit, but he doesn't lie. And he was there when that happened. So, interesting stuff. You know, talking about, you know, the philosophy behind how magnet motors could work and even some of these other phenomena, I came across an aha moment when I was interviewing a guy, T. Henry Murray's son, John Murray, is still alive. Yeah.
And he's up there, though, isn't he?
He is, like 81-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He just finished a DVD, which is basically his sixth version of his book about what his father had accomplished. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was harnessing free energy. In its heyday, I think he was said it was producing 50 kilowatts. And this is just out of, he called it scalar energy. But it occurred to me as I was talking to him in his home after viewing his DVD, we talk about tidal power. The moon is going around the Earth, and the Earth spins around once a day and is pretty much a solid mass, except that the oceans are sloshing around, and it's attracted to the moon, so you have the tides going back and forth. We can relate to that really easy. That doesn't take that's not even junior high math. That's elementary school math or understanding. Why can't we use that same principle of magnetism on the Earth? You've got this huge magnet that's spinning around the sun, the moon, and other orbs out there are magnetic, and if you take two magnets and move them in relation to one another, there's flux. And so why couldn't we have flux and harness that flux with devices such as a magnet motor or an electromagnetic motor properly configured so that you put in 50 watts and you get out 5,000 watts?
Now, let me ask you this. You have posted on your website a story about a jetpack system. I'm fascinated with these. I've been fascinated with them, Sterling, since I was a kid when a company called Williams produced a jetpack. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that ever since a man's been around, he's been wanting to fly around like birds. And it doesn't surprise me the least that you would be interested in that quite keenly.
I'm always in the clouds. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, that's what Coast to Coast is all about, is that kind of, the Jetson. When are we going to get to the Jetson world? And this guy, I interviewed a guy a week ago. His name is Morgado is the last name, first name. How come I can't?
Well, don't say Morgus.
No. This is the mighty engine. I'm sorry. Deer in the spotlight here for a second. It'll come to me in a second. Anyway, he has this device, a motor that actually won NASA's Tech Talk Create the Future Prize in 2006, and he was competing against the likes of Boeing, Xerox.
Is this Angel Labs?
Yeah, Angel Labs.
Okay.
Yeah. This motor, if you were to take one of his motors and replace an SUV, for example, his motor that would put out the same amount of torque would be the size of the alternator.
That's incredible.
And the weight would likewise be just minuscule compared to the engine. We're talking a 300-pound motor replacing a 3,000-pound motor.
Now, how long can somebody stay airborne in one of these things?
Well, I was asking him after our interview. I said, I was asking him about, did you see the story we had on our news about this flying car? This car that has these wings and can fold up. You land and the wings fold up. You can drive down the road, park in your garage. And he said, well, that's not a flying car. That's a rotable airplane. Because a flying car needs to be able to take off and land vertically. And his technology can do that. Because in order to do that, you need to have the power-to-weight ratio high enough that the weight of the motor and the system is not going to keep you down on the ground. And that's why he's going to be able to have this backpack-like jetpack type of system with two of these 3.5 diameter motors, one for backup, one as a primary driver to drive a turbo type system that can make you airborne for an hour. Land, refuel, you're up in the air for another hour. And this is technology that could emerge this year. The reason it might not is because his primary focus is in retrofitting vehicles, not in this little individual personal jetpack type thing. But ironically, he's got money for the jetpack, but he doesn't have money yet for the developing of the retrofit.
Well, and now it's going to be tough to get money, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, I know there are people out there with money. They're just looking for the right technologies. Typically, they want to see something that's got a production plant.
Yeah, they want upside.
Mm-hmm. But it's out there. And, you know, I see money moving once in a while. It's not completely dried up.
You know, with gasoline plummeting in oil prices now below $35 a barrel, and yeah, you know, it's going to go back up one day.
Yeah.
But isn't this the time to strike and come up with automobiles that they get incredible mileage or alternative energy for those motors?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one difference between now and the 70s when we had the fuel crunch back then.
Yeah.
And that is really kind of what launched the solar revolution, that really got us shot in the arm because he had the solar credits. My dad built the first solar system in our home back during that time. And then people kind of went back to sleep when Reagan came along and pulled a plug on that program. But now I think people, there's a lot more momentum now. And so I don't see that the industry is going to die or even wither. It might drop a little bit and has dropped with the economy, but it's not going to go away. And if anything, I see it as being the future. It's going to be like the computer revolution, where it's going to start big and clunky. The first adopters are going to be paying a lot of money, but pretty soon everyone's going to be having one. It's going to get smaller, smaller, cheaper, and cheaper. What are we paying now for a 500 gigawatt external hard drive was $79.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, look how quickly they, and you know what? And it's going to keep going in that direction, too.
It is.
Really is. We're going to come up to the top of the hour, but when we come back, I want to talk about gravity motors and Dr. Stephen Greer and what he's still trying to do and work on as well. Sterling, as you look at this entire field, what is the most exciting area that you think is?
That's a really hard question to answer because there's so many things going on. Every day there's just something that's almost like over the top, just, oh, this is so cool. You know, we put a feature, just about one feature story a day, and then we link to about three or four other stories from around the world at freeenergynews.org, freeenergynews.com, and you can keep track of what's going on. But there are just so many things going on. There's not going to be one thing that's going to save this energy mix. There's a whole bunch of things, and I think several things are going to be really making a difference and already are making a difference even now.
When is somebody going to jump up and down, though, and get it done?
It is happening. It really is.
It's quiet.
It is, but, I mean, we're talking, I'm going to be interviewing a guy here in a couple weeks who's got a plasma system from this the PAP engine, this noble gas engine that would cost 14 cents in fuel a year and would run a home or a car or whatever.
How much would it cost to to build one of those engines?
It wouldn't be much more than the comparable engine, and yet you don't have fuel costs.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Stay with us. Sterling Allen is our special guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back.